of a lifetime to serve on the Ketchikan School Board for 5 years, including 2 terms as board president. I was elected to the school board as an 18-year-old high school senior, reelected in 2016. Since then, I also served on the Alaska Juvenile Justice Advisory Committee for 3 years, was appointed by Governor Walker, spent a year on the Association of Alaska School Boards Board of Directors. And so I have a lot of local government experience, some at the state level as well. Been in business. I've owned a small business, managed small business. And so for me, I think government works best closest to the people. And with the situations that Alaska is facing, I think we need someone who knows the cause and effect of what the state does to, and how that affects our local communities, our small businesses, and the hardworking everyday Alaskans. And so I think as we have over the next hour, as we have the opportunity to talk, I think the voters of District 36 have 2 records to take a look at. I think each coming from a different direction, each with different ideologies and philosophies. And so look forward to just having a conversation and really getting to talk about the issues, because I think that's the most important thing of the campaign. And I really appreciate Representative Ortez's approach of keeping this an issue focused campaign. I think that's really important in today's political atmosphere. And so just look forward to having a conversation.
Thank you, and Dan Ortez.
Thank you, Layla, and I join Trevor in thanking KRBD and yourself for putting this program on. It's an opportunity for the both of us to communicate with the voting public and with our constituents. It's an honor. It's been an honor of mine to be able to serve for 4 years as the District 36 state representative in the Alaska State Legislature, and I humbly come before the communities of District 36 again, asking for their support in this upcoming election. This election is about a record that's been established. It's a clear record. It's a record that reflects cooperation, communication, and a commitment to serving all constituents of District 36. It's a record that includes legislative accomplishments. It's a record that includes reaching out, listening to the constituents throughout the district, and then being willing to make tough decisions. In the 4 years that I've been in the legislature, it was an unprecedented time for the state in terms of significant declining tax revenue in the form of oil tax revenue, and particularly production tax revenue was down by as much as 90%, and that put the state and therefore the legislature and the administration in a tough spot. And the legislature, along with the administration, reacted in a reasonable, cooperative fashion, particularly in this last session. There was a lot of cooperation throughout the legislature, both in the Senate and the House and across the two bodies and across the two political parties. And, of course, it included independent representation in the House side with Representative Grant and myself. In any case, decisions were made, decisions that no doubt, you know, will have an impact on the state of Alaska as we move forward, but they were made in the best interests of the state, in the best interests of the long-term well-being of the state and its inhabitants. And so I'm just asking that the community looks at my record, looks at my record of public service, my voting record, and if they do that, I feel confident that that they're going to give me another shot at serving for another 2 years. And so thank you for the opportunity, and I also like to thank Trevor Shaw for being here as a candidate, for putting his name forward. It's not an easy thing to go out into the public and put yourself out there, and it's good that voters have a choice, and so I applaud you for coming forward and for conducting the campaign in a very honorable fashion.
Thank you. Thank you.
And most of the questions that I have prepared ahead of time were submitted to me by listeners and people who I'm pretty sure vote. They definitely pay attention. And then also, if anybody out there wants to call in with a question, we have Vicki out there ready to take your question. You can either ask it yourself on the air, or she'll, if you're shy, she'll write it down for you. So you can do that by calling 225-9655, or again, if you're in one of the outlying House District 36 communities, you can call 1-800-557-5723. My first submitted question is, has the state cut enough from the budget? If not, where specifically can more cuts be made? And please don't just say we need to find efficiencies. Be specific about what you think is expendable. And this time we will start with Representative Ortez.
It's a very good question, Layla. There is no question that we have made significant reductions to the budget. The capital budget, for example, is the smallest that it's been in a number of years. And that's brought some significant consequences to the workforce in the state of Alaska. Without a large capital budget, without a robust capital budget, the infrastructure investments aren't being made. The repairs to state-owned buildings, roads, our marine highway system, they've all been hurt by the reduction in the capital budget. In the operating budget, we've also made significant cuts. On average, the different departments have been cut by as much as 20% across the board, with the exception of education and health and human services. And when you make those kind of cuts, there's real impacts. We today have anywhere between 2,500 to 3,000 less workers working in the state of Alaska than were working back in 2015. And when you think about 2,500 to 3,000 people no longer having a wage that they can spend in the economy, and that they can support their families and their families going to schools and you know, children in school, those, all those kinds of things. There's just a rippling effect that we've seen as a result of those cuts. Those cuts were necessary. We had this big budget deficit that was there. They were tough to make. And so the question started, where can we make more cuts? It's going to be hard to find deeper cuts. You can't significantly cut the budget from this point forward without cutting education and or health and human services. There's just not a way that you can do that and still have an effective fish and game program, for example. And it's important that we do have a fish and game that can manage our resources effectively. So to answer the question, there will be, and I don't want to use the word, but I'm going to use the word, there will be a few efficiencies that can be found. But the reality is that the cuts have been made, and there's not a lot of room out there for further cuts, with the exception, if you want to go down the road of cutting education, well, that's going to have an impact on local communities because there will be a call for a makeup of those lost revenues from the state in terms of local taxes and local tax increases and things like that. So, I'm hard pressed, Layla, to say that that there can be some significant cuts that I'm willing to make. I'm not willing to close more beds at our Pioneer home, which would be a result of further cuts in health and human services. So it's just tough. I hope that answers your question.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. And Trevor Shaw.
And so to use a different word, I mean, efficiencies are one thing. And yes, I mean, every organization, every household, every business, every government has to be as efficient as possible. And so, but cost savings and cost sharing are probably more the term I would use. And so you look at things, I'll talk about the required local contribution. And so on average in Ketchikan, the average homeowner pays $663 towards education and towards the Ketchikan Gateway Borough School District, providing education for our students. That's something that is not a statewide mandated tax. If that was made statewide, there would be an increase in revenue to the state of Alaska of between $120 and $150 million. And so it's time we have a conversation about the role and responsibility of government. Harder, better, faster, stronger is the approach I've always taken when it comes to government, whether it's the size of the state or whether it's all the way down to the school district. And when I was first elected to the school board, we were facing declining revenue at the local level. The cuts to the state budget hadn't quite kicked in yet, and overall education funding has remained fairly flat, but we saw local cuts to education. When I ran for school board, I didn't say we were going to cut this, we were going to cut that. You have to be willing to take a holistic approach, and you have to be willing to dive through everything and figure out, okay, what are we doing and what can we be doing better? That was the case in 2014 when I appreciate Representative Ortiz bringing it up, is you can't make guarantees when you're running in elections necessarily on what you're going to cut, because what might seem like a cash cow when you get there, it might be a really effective program that is truly serving the citizens of the state of Alaska. So we have to one of the things I think would be a smart thing to do is take the 2002-2004 budget and compare it to the budget that we have now, take a look at the programs and the agencies and the departments that we have, see what's different from that budget since it's more the size of where we are with regard to revenue now, see what was added in, and just have a conversation about, okay, are these programs, are these agencies, are these operations still justified? And so you can't make those guarantees when you're in a campaign. It's good to make promises, but you don't want to make ones you can't keep. And so I think that's the conversation we have to have. A good friend of mine who's running for legislature up in District 35, which is centered in Sitka, made the statement of in government there can't be any sacred cows. In Alaska moving forward, there can't be any sacred cows in spending, and sometimes you have to make sacred barbecue. And so nothing's off the table, but being there and actually being able to be a part of that, sitting on the finance committee, having those opportunities to look at the budget from a much larger standpoint with much more information is incredibly important to making sure that you're not hacking and slashing, but making meaningful changes to government.
Okay, thank you for that. And another question submitted by a listener is, how do you make your decisions, or how would you make your decisions? Constituent input, your own opinions, and or party line. And this time we'll start with Trevor Shaw.
So to talk about party line for a minute, I don't see party line as actually something that exists. I think there are ideologies and there are philosophies and there are morals that people have that make up their political personality. That's true with myself. That's true with Representative Ortiz. That's true with every politician. And so on some issues, things seem more partisan or other, and that's where the definition of party lines come from, is it's believed that people of this party will fall on that side, people of that party will fall on that side. Parties are like big families, and we've seen that at the national level, we've seen it at the local level, is not everybody agrees, but there tends to be core beliefs that everyone shares. And so absolutely, your core beliefs, your values, the input of your colleagues, the input of your constituents, you have to take, and I mentioned this with the approach to government, you have to take a holistic approach. You have to be willing to take a look at the cause and effect of the decisions that you make, and I have a record of doing that at the school board level, because we did. We had to make hundreds of thousands of dollars in cuts and things that affect the education of students every day, and that affect the livelihood of teachers. And so making sure that you're talking to the people who are affected, making sure that you're talking to the people who have to pay the bill, because in government, sometimes the cause and effect is you have to either look at cuts, efficiencies, or cost savings, or new revenue whether that be equitable taxes or tax increases. And so how you make those decisions, it has to be, you have to get that from a broad spectrum of people. You have to be willing to listen. You have to be willing to listen to people you disagree with and to process the both sides of an argument. And that's many cases I was on the side of a 4-3 vote on the school board, sometimes on what people would consider the conservative side of things, sometimes what people would consider the more moderate side of things. People matter most, and that's the approach you have to take. And so as long as you're open-minded and you're willing to listen to folks and ultimately make your mind up based on all of the information that you receive, and I think that's just the foundation of good governance.
And Dan Ortez.
The question was, how do I go about making my decisions? And again, I think the record is clear. I have worked very, very hard at getting constituent input. I write regularly to local newspapers throughout the district. I've submitted surveys on key issues facing the state in my 4 years in office. I go to the communities, meet with local governments, local government bodies, and meet with constituents, knock on doors, and constituent input is where it begins for me. I still kind of believe in Lincoln's idea of government of the people, by the people, for the people. And I try to live up to that pledge every day that I'm in office. And so it starts with constituent input. And then from there, I try to say what's in the best interest of District 36 is another key factor. And then finally, sometimes it's what's in the best interest of the state overall. And from that vantage point is how I make my decisions. And again, if you look at my voting record, if you look at my actions while I've been in office, it clearly reflects a commitment to those principles.
Thank you. And another submitted question. How do you plan to work across the aisle to ensure our district's needs are prioritized at a state level? Give examples of your ability to collaborate with others who are politically opposed. And this time we'll start with Dan Ortez.
Okay. This past year, one of my legislative accomplishments was to pass the Race to Alaska bill on behalf of the Ketchikan Chamber of Commerce. And that was done, particularly on the Senate side, with clear cooperation across the aisle, across the political aisle. And again, the bill itself was carried on the floor of the Senate by Senator Kevin Meyer, who is now running for lieutenant governor, Republican. I went to Kevin because I had established a relationship with him, and Senator Stedman was out of town attending a family wedding at the time. Otherwise, he would have been the one to run that particular bill. But Senator Meyer was willing to take that bill. He said, I'd be glad to do that, Representative Ortez. And he took it on the floor of the Senate and was the one that carried it through on the Senate side. Again, Senator Meyer, Republican Party, the House that I was a part of, the majority, was a bipartisan majority. And there you're working all the time with people from the Republicans, from the Democrats, and of course, there were the two independents. So, again, I just point to my record. I'm a nonpartisan, and I have a strong record of working well with both sides of the aisle.
Thank you. And Trevor Shaw.
So when I was first elected to the school board, there was a bill that was proposed, and it was the SB 91 of the time. That was what the bill was called before that ultimately became the infamous crime bill. But it was SB 91 was a bill to consolidate school district insurance funds across the state. And the borough and the school district got together and calculated the cost, and the cost to our community would have been nearly $3 million the first year to be able to consolidate into the statewide insurance pool. I carried a resolution locally at our school board and all the way to the Association of Alaska School Boards to oppose that bill, passed unanimously. And the bill at the time had been sponsored by none other than Mike Dunleavy, who is now the Republican nominee for governor and a close personal friend of mine. But the approach that I took to specific that bill was what is the impact to our local community? How does it affect the community of Ketchikan? And that's the approach that I have taken in my time in public service and will continue to take. And we took that same approach with regard to the local education fund. The school district and the school board and the borough assembly long fought about what the proper level of education funding should be. And just like I've advocated for at the state level, stability and early funding of education and is making sure that we have something in place that the school district has to have a general idea of what the upcoming funding is going to look like for the school district. So myself and one of the assembly members, we sat down and then went back to our respective bodies with the idea that we came up with, which was to establish a local education fund and to dedicate certain funding sources into that fund to have a baseline of funding for education each year. And that was something that passed both the school board and the assembly unanimously. With conversations from both sides, of the aisle as to very strongly of making sure we keep taxes low, but also that we fund education adequately. And that's something we were able to balance and pass at a local level. And that's the record I hope to be able to take to the legislature as well.
Thank you. And I do want to remind our listeners that this is a call-in show. You can call us with your questions for the House District 36 candidates. You can call 225-9655, or if you're over on POW or listening from Wrangell, you can call 1-800-557-5723. And what my next submitted question is, what are some of your budget priorities now that it appears oil prices are on a rebound? Maybe a slow rebound, but it does seem to be rebounding. And who did I start with last time? I think I started with Representative Ortiz. So this time we'll start with Trevor Shaw.
$84 a barrel the other day, which is crazy. I mean, it's good to see that those prices are rebounding. And the conversation we need to have as much to the same extent as we are with the price of oil is the throughput in the pipeline. But budget priorities, stabilizing budgets for important things like the Marine Highway, education, having sustainable funding sources. We take a look at the Marine Highway. I really appreciate and applaud what Southeast Conference is doing with regard to the AMHS reform project, making sure that we have protections in place, that the stakeholders of that system are the ones being the primary decision makers with hopefully something, again, of a funding formula from the state legislature as to what the funding of the Marine Highway from the state is going to look like every year. Education, early funding, I think that's something that the legislature has taken a look at, and I'm supportive of that. What we need to do with the budget, and something that I would introduce on day one, is a change to the legislative rules that the budget must come before both bodies of the legislature, be considered and adopted within the first 30 days of the legislature. And that's something that we should prioritize, is getting the budget taken care of so that state employees, local governments, small businesses, and the citizens of the state of Alaska can know what to expect for the upcoming year. So that way, school districts aren't having to make pink slips at the last minute. Municipalities aren't having to put construction projects on hold. And we can do that in a way where other bills can continue to be considered by committees and everything, but the first thing that has to come before the legislature and be voted on one way or another is the budget. And that's something we'd have to do in cooperation with the governor. But I think it's that important is the we need the assurances. The people of Alaska deserve to know the direction that state government is planning to go and what the politicians running the state are going to do, whether the Republicans are in charge, the Democrats are in charge, or whether it's split control. Those are conversations we need to have. We need to continue to promote responsible development of natural resources and accessibility to those resources and in a way that promotes individual prosperity. And could spend an hour talking about the things to do with the budget, but first and foremost, we need to establish a process that prioritizes getting the budget done right and getting it done early.
Before we go to Representative Bortez, I got to follow up on that. I mean, considering how long it's taken the legislature to get budgets passed for the last few sessions, because it's been a tough process, how realistic is that?
You know, I've thought about that. And the thing, you have to set a standard. And there has to be a standard that if the legislature can't meet it, they have to go out into the public and say, well, we couldn't do it. We had to set that off to the side because we couldn't agree on these areas. There can be certain areas of the budget that can possibly be done early, like education, like the Marine Highway, like the capital budget, since those haven't been, at least this past session, too contentious. And there has to be a price for not getting the job done. And I think that price needs to be more than just every time we go to the ballot box. Is it the most realistic? Maybe not, but we need to have a standard and expectations that the people can look to as to how the legislature intends to get its business done, and then the legislators need to be willing to say if they weren't able to meet those expectations to say we didn't get it done and this is why.
Okay, thank you, and Representative Vortez.
Well, I'm interested, Trevor. Fully applaud your idea in general of trying to come up with a budget in a more expeditious manner than what we have been. I agree with you on that overall goal. However, the 30-day idea, did you run that by Senator Stedman by chance?
No, I did not. I'm sure he'll be surprised to hear it as well.
you talked earlier about how you wanted to look at the budget and scrutinize the budget and go through that budget in terms of making sure that we are finding the efficiencies. That takes time.
It does take
time. Just takes time, and you need to have the different departments prepared to present their budget and to be able to go through that. And that takes time in hearings in different committees. So I applaud the overall goal of having a budget at an earlier time, but 30 days, I don't think that can be possibly done. But I do applaud your overall goal of we do need to be more efficient than we have been in terms of getting it done, not until the second special session or
right.
Third special session. So with that said, my priorities of the budget, it's real clear. We need a long-term, sustainable fiscal plan. I've been saying that for the 4 years that I've been in office. We, as a part of the House majority, put forward such a plan in this last legislative session. All of it was not adopted by the Senate. Senate Bill 26 was adopted by the Senate as a part of that, establishing that fiscal plan, restructuring of the permanent fund. Which did go a long ways towards establishing a fiscal plan. However, we're still left with anywhere between a $500 million to $700 million deficit. So first priority would be to establish a clear, balanced budget, establish clearly balanced budget. That's number one priority. After that, my priority is always going to be towards making sure that our schools are adequately funded. When we do that, we're investing in our most precious resource, which is our future, our future labor force, our future contributors to society, and there's no greater investment that we can make than investing in education. So that would be, always will be a priority. After that, the, to make sure that our fish and game is well funded in terms of so that they can go out and manage our very, very precious fisheries industry. It's the number one driver of our economy here in Southeast Alaska. The last couple of years have been rough in the salmon industry, as we're all aware of. We need to make sure that we're doing everything we can to enhance, protect this very, very valuable resource. You know, from all the way up to Bristol Bay, which has done well these last couple of years, down to southern Southeast Alaska, we have an abundance of resources that are there, that have been there for hundreds of years, and that if we continue to manage things the right way, they'll be there into the future. But we do need to make the investments to protect that industry and to make sure that we're doing all the research that we possibly can do to make sure that we're getting the best picture possible of what's happening out there in the oceans and making sure that we're doing everything we can to protect that. So those would be my priorities. Education, first of all, fiscal plan, education, fisheries, those have always been my priorities in the legislature, and they will continue to be that.
Okay. Thank you very much. I'm not sure if this is happening over time or if it was this way to begin with. Is your chair really, really short? Would you like to adjust that?
I'm okay.
Okay. All right. Sorry, listeners. You don't know what's going on here, but Representative Vortez's chair is almost on the floor, it looks like. We do have somebody on the phone, though. Calvin, are you still there?
Yes, ma'am.
All right. Go ahead with your question, Calvin.
Okay. My question is this. Who keeps track of the deficits in the legislature? What happened? I didn't hear anything in the news that I remember when we were $1 billion or $2 billion, and then finally somebody hits the enter button and we're $3 billion in debt. I mean, was there any procedure involved in maybe at $1 billion saying, hey, look, we got to start taking care of business, or $2 billion or $3 billion? That's the thing that I'm concerned about, is that there was nobody, as far as, like I said, I can see, that the state of Alaska is $1 billion in debt, and all of a sudden the newspapers say we're $3 billion. So I just want to know who was supposed to be watching the red line as opposed to the black line, and just seeing the amount of money just pile up that we didn't have. Thank you.
Calvin, can you clarify that just a little bit? Where did you read that and when?
Well, it was in the papers, wasn't it, that we were $3.5 billion in debt, and I don't remember. Maybe the gentleman that are sitting there in the studio with you can remember. Was there an article saying we're $2 billion in debt or $1 billion in debt? And when do we start worrying about it as a legislator, before it gets to be $3 billion? Was there anything that was said in the legislature at $1 billion that we should start looking?
Okay, all right. Thank you very much.
Thank you. You're doing a great job, all three of you.
Thanks, Calvin. And we will have Representative Ortez address that first.
Yeah, thank you very much for the question, Calvin. I think you may be confusing what we call a budget deficit with debt. We are not in debt. The state of Alaska is not in debt today and has not been in debt. Now, we have been balancing our budget deficits for the last 5 to 6, 7 years with savings, and those savings have been drawn down significantly in order to balance those budget deficits. But we are not in debt, and we're blessed in the state to have a $65 billion permanent fund that's there No other state in the union that I know of has is blessed that way. So that's a good thing. And don't get me wrong, I'm not saying that we need to go down and start drawing that balance down. I'm not in any way for that. We have had budget deficits. There was a $3.5 billion budget deficit that was been brought down to a $700 million deficit with restructuring of the permanent fund. And so there's that. But at this time, we do not have debt per se.
Okay. And Trevor, did you want to address that as well?
Yeah, I just want to echo what Representative Ortez said. And people are monitoring that very closely. Legislative Finance, the Governor's Office of Management and Budget are consistently watching that. And that's how we're able to know that that we're now running with the restructure of the permanent fund, actually something of a surplus. But we were deficit spending, and that's something that through the CBR, the Constitutional Budget Reserve, the statutory budget reserve, that we burned through $15 billion in savings. And technically, the state of Alaska will never be in debt until the permanent fund is gone. I mean, we'll always have those assets. There might not be anything available for the state to spend, but like Representative Ortez said, we're very blessed, and I'll say we both disagree with the fact that we spent down savings for so long in the manner that we did without taking measured steps to address that. So thank you for your question. I think it's important to be able to clarify that so folks can understand what's going on.
Okay, and Calvin, did that address your concern?
Yes.
Okay, thanks so
much.
Thank
you guys. Have a good day or good night.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right, and again, if you want to call in with a question, go ahead and give us a call at 225-9655 or 1-800-557-5723 if you're over on Prince of Wales Island or streaming us from Wrangell. And I think somebody may be trying to call in with a question. I was going to draw things out, but nope, that's not good for radio. So we'll go ahead to my next submitted question. 2 years ago, the legislature approved SB 91, the other one, the crime one, which overhauled criminal justice statutes. Some revisions have since been made. Was SB 91 the right message to send, and are there further revisions needed? And this time we'll start with Trevor Shaw.
I don't think SB 91 was the right answer, and I think we're seeing some very unfortunate and devastating loopholes that exist in the bill. I applaud the efforts of the legislature and the governor to do something. I think the approach wasn't the right one. You know, catch and release works with fish, but not with criminals. And so that's something, you know, I think we're at the point of where it's so bad, and it has such a bad public reputation, that in order to reinstill confidence in our public safety system and in our judicial system and in our corrections, that the best thing to do would be to fully repeal SB 91, start over, and take a more surgical approach to criminal justice reform. That's something that I think needs to be tackled this next session. I mean, we've seen some outcomes of minimum sentencing, maximum sentencing that have caused some outrage with things like sexual assault, and so it's troublesome, and that needs to be one of the priorities that the legislature takes on. And I think we should just go ahead and repeal it and start over. And if I had been there this past session, I would have voted in favor of the full repeal and start over, because I think it's something that it's gone so bad that to, like I said, to reinstill that public confidence and to take another shot at meaningful criminal justice reform, the best thing we can do is start from scratch.
Thank you. And Dan Ortez.
Well, first of all, I did not vote for Senate Bill 91. When we were contemplating that bill in the legislature, I did what I always do. I went back to my constituents here in Ketchikan and throughout District 36, and particularly went to the police departments, state troopers, and got a feel for what they thought about some of these reforms that were being considered with Senate Bill 91. And it was clear that there was not a lot of support there for the bill, so I didn't vote for it. With that said, we passed Senate Bill 91 in part of the motivation for it was to save the state money. We were spending lots of money in the Department of Corrections, and this was at a time when our revenues were falling fast, and people were looking for ways to save money. And part of the discussion was around the need for treating, quote, minor crimes with less harshness. In other words, what sense did it make to lock somebody up if they were caught shoplifting or something like that? So there was a lot of discussion. Obviously, there was discussion about, you know, the war on drugs and whether we were being effective with the war on drugs by locking people up and throwing away the key, whether that was an effective policy. And clearly, the statistics indicated that it wasn't. It was an effective policy. So it's easy to go back now and say, oh, what a mistake. I would agree with Trevor, though, that it was, you know, in the end, it wasn't a good bill. And again, I didn't vote for it. However, a complete repeal, I wasn't there for that this last legislative session. We did tighten up some things. We did make some changes to Senate Bill 91. And, you know, the thing about it is that when you're looking at statistics of crime and you're looking at issues like the opioid crisis, et cetera, all of this kind of gets mixed in, and some people tended to blame everything on Senate Bill 91. They didn't consider necessarily that the economy was falling, that unemployment was increasing, that there were other issues out there that could very well be the real reasons behind the rise in crime. And so that's unfortunate. And I do think that a total repeal might be a bit much. So we'll see. You know, certainly Trevor's right, though. We will be taking up the issue again in whoever's in this next legislative body. They will be addressing the issue again. The public has cried out for changes to continue to occur. So it'll be at the forefront of people's thoughts in this next legislative session, that's for sure.
Okay, thank you very much. And we do have another caller on the line. And this time it is Jack. Are you there, Jack?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, go ahead with your question.
I'll just keep this one simple. I'm local. Dan, you taught me in high school. My family and I recently got into gill netting. And, you know, giving it our best shot, spent a lot of money, and you might succeed, you might fail, and, you know, we might succeed. But our experience so far has been, my question is there anything on the table to help Alaskans get into the fisheries, economically speaking? It's very expensive for the permits and the boats, of course. And our experience so far has, you know, we have two options, State of Alaska loans or the CFAB loans. And I'm just wondering if there's anything on the books or in the works to help our younger generations get into the fisheries and keep it in Alaska.
Okay, thank you very much. And this time we'll have Representative Ortez answer first.
Good question, Jack. I am proud to say that just in this past legislative session, I was the chief sponsor of House Bill 76, which broadens the categories for which fishermen can borrow from the revolving loan fund. Now they can borrow from the revolving loan fund for purchase of equipment, purchase of boat, purchase of permit. And in doing so, it was a small step that did exactly what you asked about. It particularly, I think, makes it more likely that a younger fisherman can get involved in the business other than just being a deckhand and can be a captain themselves. Is it easy? No, it's not. Do we need to continue to look for ways to make it more plausible for particular younger fishermen to get involved in the business? Yes, we do. The graying of the fleet is an issue. The average permit holder in the state of Alaska is getting older and older, the average age, and that's problematic as we look forward into the future. My record's pretty clear. I've been very supportive of the fishing industry. House Bill 56, as well as House Bill 76. Actually, House Bill 56 was the one that did that. 76 was more about the mariculture industry. It just left me there for a second. But in any case, I'm committed, Jack, to doing what I can as a legislator to help younger fishermen get involved in the business, because it's going to be critical as we move forward that we continue to have new blood in the industry to work as captains and to work out there in the fishing fleet.
Thank you. And Trevor Shaw.
So I'll agree and I'll applaud Representative Ortiz on this one. He has been very, very supportive of the fishing industry. Our disagreements kind of exist on the approach to the budget and the role of government, but absolutely, that's something I think changing the criteria for availability of loans on the revolving loan fund was important as we look for ways to be able to promote the next generation of Alaska fishermen. And so sustainable yield is important, but you have to have people who will continue to fish for those fish and the upcoming generations. And so that's something that I'm very proud that legislators from District 36, District 33, District 1, which has been the Ketchikan district in recent history, have all been very supportive and large promoters of the fisheries and ensuring that we have responsible, active development of our fisheries and aquaculture, mariculture. And so I'll agree with Representative Ortiz. That's not where our agreements exist, but I will say that if I'm elected, I'll continue to promote strongly a viable and thriving fishing industry.
And does that answer your question, Jack?
Yes, ma'am, it does. Thank you, gentlemen. I know it's important to all of us. And as we move ahead, just keeping our heads together. So appreciate
all right.
Both your answers.
Thanks, Jack, and good luck with the fishing business there. All right.
Thank you.
Thanks. And we also had a caller who didn't want to go on the air with it, but left a question with Vicki. The question is, local Ketchikan State Park Totem Bite charged $5 per person this summer. For nearly 50,000 visitors, that's about $250,000 or half the state park budget. I don't know if it's that park in particular or overall. What will you do to make sure that money comes back to our local community? And we'll start with Trevor Shaw.
So just thinking, because I'm a big wonk and a nerd, I know there's the designated funds clause of the Constitution that says there shall be no designated funds. But first thing, gotta have ask the question of legislative legal department of money that is brought in by area specific revenue. Can that be placed in a fund that's dedicated to the upkeep, the promotion, and the overall operations of the same area, or in this case, park that generated those funds? I absolutely think that anything that's generated here should stay here for the betterment and the maintenance of Totem Bite Park, and I would promote the same thing for any other park in the state. And so that would just be something to have to take a look at. I don't know off the top of my head, but just that's kind of my general thought process. But I think those funds should return to where they originated from.
If it's legal.
If it's legal, yes.
Yes. All right. And Representative Ortiz.
And I would concur with Trevor on that. There is the issue of dedicated funds, and we see that in a lot of different areas of the budgeting process, particularly that comes up in education.
Yeah.
I'm excited about, the prospect of a second cabin out at Settlers Cove. We've had such great utilization of the one cabin that's out there, and it's, I've heard from constituents about how if we got a second cabin that could continue, that would generate twice the revenue, that the bookings would remain solid for that second cabin as well, and that therefore would then create even more added revenue. So there's ways that we can help sustain our park system, and one of those ways that would be near and dear to our hearts here in Ketchikan would be to get a second cabin out there at Settlers Cove. Did I say Totem Bites first of all?
Said Settlers Cove, though. So, yeah. All right, great. And we have less than 10 minutes left, so I'm going to ask one more question before closing statements, and this is also a little bit of a plug. KRBD is going to be hosting another forum tomorrow with the Stand for Salmon and Stand for Alaska representatives. Where do you stand on ballot initiative 1 and why? And we'll start with Representative Ortiz.
The question, is a very good question, because there's no issue that we have. Things are changing out there in our waters of Alaska and the Pacific Ocean, and temperatures are warming, and there are issues that we need to consider when we're looking at the habitat of our fisheries and the habitat of our oceans. That said, I'm not convinced that the initiative is the best process of looking at issues like this. I'm not convinced that it's the most effective way that we can actually come up with reasonable solutions to the issues that are in front of us. And so I've been hesitant to get fully behind the initiative. However, the initiative came as a result of the fact that the legislature was unable to come up with a bill, with a statute in this particular area. We looked at one, and it didn't go anywhere. And so the people are left with, those people who are concerned about the issue, they're left with that one solution. So it's a tough one for me. I'm not in full support of that particular initiative because again, I just it's not the best way of going about bringing about needed reform. However, if you look at my work that I've done on transboundary mining issues in cooperation with the administration, I'm all about trying to protect and enhance our fishing industry, and a big part of that is to making sure that we're protecting that habitat that's out there, and so that's why I think I'm interested in keeping the issue of transboundary mining in front of people's minds and making sure that the state of Alaska continues to have a seat at the table and that we're doing everything we can to protect our interests with which potentially could be damaged in the long term if those mines continue to develop in the manner that they have. Open pit mines on the other side of the border, we saw what happened at Mount Polly, and it would be devastating if such a thing were to happen here in some of our major river systems like the Stikine, the Unic, here in southeast Alaska. So, I'm not a supporter of one, let's put it that way. At the same time, we do need to make sure that we're doing everything we can to protect our habitat.
So you support the concept, but you're going to vote no.
I support the concept, but I'm not convinced that it's the best way to go about achieving our goals. So let's put it that way.
All right. And Trevor Shaw.
Well, I guess that makes me the only candidate in the race to say no. You know, I think it's a situation where overregulation is being proposed as the solution, and I don't think that's effective. The initiative is a political process. I think we need to take an approach, the approach from the legislative level, which is a pragmatic, practical process. And I agree. I think there are some areas that need to be addressed. We'll talk about the Canadian mines for a minute, a concept that I have rumbling around in my head and have talked about it with people. Not originally my concept, but I like the idea of having mines that are just on the other side of our borders, or even here in the state, investing in what we call catastrophe, catastrophe being basically these mines having to buy a certain amount of salmon fry in hatcheries and investing in those, that if something goes bad, those salmon would be released into the wild to make up for any losses. I mean, the environmental impact of damage that might come from those mines could be catastrophic, and so even something as small of an investment as just, you know, salmon fry to be able to hopefully bolster the longevity and sustainability of the fishing industry, I think, is something we should look at. Ballot measure one, like I said, that's a political process, not pragmatic. I think it's something the legislature should take a look at, bring in the departments, the agencies that will be affected, the communities, the industry, and actually have that conversation from not an emotional standpoint, but from a what's the compromise? How do we find reasonable solutions that protect our environment and also promote the advancement of industry? And so I work in companies that do logistics for mining operations and that also do petroleum recycling. And so I'm very familiar with the Department of Environmental Conservation and Department of Natural Resource permitting processes and the protections that exist. We have very rigorous and detailed environmental protections in our state, and so we have to be reasonable in our solutions, and so that way we're not driving industry out into other areas of the country and the world that may not have those protections. And so I'm going to be voting no on Proposition 1.
Thank you very much, and we will now have some quick closing statements, and we'll start with Trevor Shaw.
Thank you, Layla. Thank you, Representative Ortiz, for being here. We're both running on different records, and I like the fact that we're able to be honest and talk about what we've done. I support restoring and paying a full permanent fund dividend under the traditional statutory formula. I oppose new broad-based taxes. I'm in favor of controlling spending and better government and more freedoms and the Second Amendment and just taking an approach of where the people's best interests come second to that of the government, and the government solely exists to promote those best interests. And so I think Alaska's best days are ahead. I think there are a lot of opportunities ahead of us. We need leaders who are willing to grasp those opportunities, grab a hold of them, take advantage of them. And, I hear a lot about what we're going to do over the next couple years for Alaska. As someone who's building a career here, hoping to build a family here, I want to build a forever for Alaska. And so my goal is to bring a different approach to government, new vision, new leadership, new energy to District 36 in the State House. I've heard a lot locally about how it's important for the next generation of leaders to stand up and be willing to serve. I have experience in business. I have experience in local government. I have experience making tough decisions that impact people on an everyday basis. And I think Representative Ortiz does too, but it all comes down to approach and ideology and the question of, are you better off now than you were 4 years ago? And if you think the role of government should be different, if you think it's time for a different direction, I would just ask that you join the conversation and consider voting for Trevor Shaw on November 6th.
Thank you. And Dan Ortiz.
Thank you, Layla. Thank you for Trevor, for both of you being here tonight. It's been a good discussion. This election is an important election. It's an important election statewide. It's an important election here locally as well. It's an important election nationally as well. Number one, I'm asking voters to get out and vote. That's, you know, that is such a precious right that we are too quick to take for granted. When we consider how much the world still today struggles with the basic right to vote, I encourage all people to contemplate, to think about that, and to get out there and to participate in the political process. I'm asking that you give me a very strong look, very strong consideration for your vote. I believe my record merits it. It's a record of achievement. It's a record of accomplishment. It's a record of communication, cooperation, and it's a record that's nonpartisan. It's not about political parties up there in the Alaska State Legislature. It's not about that. It's about the issues that we differ on more geographically than politically. The issues that are important to coastal legislators, the Alaska Marine Highway, for example, fishing industry, for example, don't reach the importance or don't reach the thought process of many of our interior legislators. And so what I think I've been able to effectively do is to work with all parties, with all legislators, to work cooperatively, to communicate well, and to try to find bridges that need to be built in order for the state to move forward. I think I've been a voice of that exactly, of bridge building, of communication, cooperation. And so with that, I think the record is clear. I think my record merits the vote of the people of District 36, and I ask for that vote.
Thank you very much. And that wraps up this evening's call-in show on KRBD. I've been your host, Layla Carey. Thanks to volunteer Vicki O'Brien, who helped out on the phones, to the listeners who submitted questions, and thanks to our candidates, Trevor Shaw and Dan Ortez. Please remember to vote in the general election on November 6th, and stay tuned for Eclectic Ladyland coming up next.